All right, fellow outposters, I got a special treat for you here today. With me in the control room is Lisa Downs, and she made the amazing Life After Flash video, which you can purchase. I'll have links down in the description. And I believe it's also on Tubi, so you can watch it there. Is that correct?
I think so. It's out a few places in North America, and I forget exactly which ones, but that sounds familiar to me. I know it's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon. I don't know if it's on Amazon Prime, at least not in North America, but if you want to stream it and you have Tubi, I know you can do it there, because that's where I saw it. So, thank you again. I know we had a little trouble getting together. I appreciate you reaching out and saying you liked the video, and those of you who haven't seen my video yet, shame on you.
Shame on you. Go and watch it.
But then watch Life After Flash, because you went into some things that I had never heard of. And so let me go back a little bit. I looked over your film history on IMDb. I saw you had a lot of short videos, music, documentary shorts, that kind of stuff. Was Life After Flash your first full-length one that you directed?
Full-length. Correct. Full-length documentary, yes. So I had done, for my third-year project for my bachelor's degree at university, I did Medium. So I did a documentary short for that. And I had kind of dabbled in a couple of other short documentaries, but this one was definitely the first feature documentary that I kind of was my creative vision from start to end. And also one that didn't realize it would take so long as it did, but glad I finished it. Glad I stuck it out.
So how did that come about? Because, I mean, if the movie Ted with the foul-mouthed teddy bear hadn't come out in 2012, I think Flash Gordon might have been just kind of one of those little cultists that Gen Xers that saw it like me would have remembered. But was that an influence over something you wanted to do, or did it come about completely different?
Came about completely different. I had been a huge fan of the film growing up. So for me, I was the age that I missed it at the cinema. I wasn't born when it came out, so I didn't get to go and see it at the cinema, but I saw it as part of kind of my childhood on television. In the UK, it's kind of on every Christmas and everyone tweets about it, and Flash Gordon's on Christmas. So I had just grown up seeing it as a kid. It was part of these staple films that I loved when I was really little. And I kind of knew about it, but like a lot of people that I knew, it was like, unless you owned the VHS or you waited for it on television, like there wasn't really any way to see it or celebrate it. And then I know from doing the documentary in 2007, Universal finally re-released it. And I think that kick-started the kind of love for it again. And then Ted, especially when that came out, it just brought a whole other generation to it as well. But for me, it was just kind of organic that it happened. I had been looking at the time to do something feature length. I love documentaries. I wanted to do something. My dogs have just come back, if you hear like a panting. I had really wanted to do a feature length film, and I didn't know what on, but I wanted it to be something that I really, really had a passion for. And I had a mutual friend who had worked with Sam on this other UK TV celebrity show, got to know him. We started talking about it at a friend's birthday party, and I just said to her, I'm fangirling that you had worked with Sam. I loved Flash Gordon. I had just missed Sam and Melody at a Comic-Con the year before, and I was kicking myself that I didn't know that they were there until about a month afterwards. And she just said, well, why don't you kind of write a proposal and I'll send it to his then agent and see what happens. And so I did, and she did. And then I ended up Skyping Sam. Funnily enough, in 4 days, it'll be 6 years ago to the day that I Skyped him. And then, yeah, and then January 2015, we started filming. So it happened really organically, and it all worked. Perfect timing for where Sam was at in his life, perfect timing for where I was at in a career. And Ted helped me build the audience for when I was trying to do the crowdfunding.
That makes sense, because I noticed that there was a big uptick in views or in popularity with Flash after that. Now, and you said you had come out before you were born. That was a nice way of saying, gosh, Yoda, you're really old.
No.
But I had always been, well, I had a weird affair with it because I loved it when I was a kid because I saw it completely straight. And then when I was a teenager and I was just too cool for this stuff, I said, man, this movie really sucks. What was I thinking? Then I came back around to it in my 20s. I'm like, no, this movie really rocks. What was I thinking? So I've loved it ever since for all the Queen music. And I had heard that in England it was a big classic over there, and I was kind of surprised when I read the box office that nearly half of it came from England. Otherwise it would have been a much bigger bomb than what it was. You were born in England, but you spent a lot of time in Australia as a young age. So was Flash big down there as well?
I don't remember it being big. No, it really is in England like a national treasure. Like Brian Blessed is a national treasure. Everyone in England loves Flash Gordon. And I think it was filmed in England. There's a lot of, like, Peter Duncan was a British treasure when he was in Flash Gordon as this TV presenter. So he was known when he did that role in England. So there's a lot of British actors that people really loved and connected with. So it feels to me, I consider it like a British film, you know, and you have Queen, and it feels like a British film, I think, to Brits. And in Australia, I don't really remember anyone talking about it. It certainly wasn't on TV that I remember either. And it definitely is this kind of, we think it's ours. We like to claim it.
Okay, so Flash is kind of an all-American hero, and we took the country, you took Flash. I think it's a fair trade.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm okay with it. So you got a lot of great interviews. I was surprised at how many people you were able to get.
Thank you, me too.
Was there anyone you wish you could have included, like Max von Sydow or Timothy Dalton?
All of them. I mean, I really... There were four key people you will notice. Hopefully you don't notice that they're not in it too much. I hope that there was enough information and enough interviewees that you maybe don't realize who isn't in it. But I really would have liked Ornella Muti. She had actually said yes, but financially I couldn't make it work, which was a shame. I was like ready to fly to Italy to go and see her, but there were other factors that wouldn't allow me to. Obviously, Max, I would have loved. I mean, I really tried. It's funny when people talk about the documentary and they, as though I hadn't thought about it. Did you not think about trying to get Timothy Dalton in the film? I'm not to say you do that, but that's probably the most common question I get is, did you not think about Timothy Dalton? And I really did try and get these four people, Mike Hodges, Ornella, Max, and Timothy. But at the end of the day, the people who were in it because they really wanted to be in it. But yeah, I would have loved to have met Ornella, and I would have loved to have met Max from it.
I didn't notice them as being missing. It was to me, those would have been gravy. But I felt like you got a lot of honest answers and a lot of... I mean, the most interesting story to me was, and that was obviously the focus of the documentary, was Sam's journey himself. You merged the making. It wasn't just a standard making of Flash and a reminiscent. You really focused in on the man himself. Was that something that came in organically, and or is there anything else you want to add to that based on your in-person impressions?
It started off as a film about Sam, funnily enough, and what his life where his life had taken him since the film and how it had impacted him. And then the organic part was the celebration of the film, because the crux really of where his life took, the path that his life took, stemmed from what happened on set of Flash Gordon. So to talk about that, you go, okay, well, I had met Melody at Laredo Comic Con, and so it'd be great to get her point of view of what happened on set. And then you think, okay, well, I wonder who else has an opinion about what happened on set. It'd be great to talk to Brian Blessed. It'd be great to talk to Richard O'Brien. And then it grew from there as a, why don't we do a celebration of the film as well? I had been familiar with a few documentaries that had come out already that celebrate classic films, like Back in Time. And then there was Elstree 76 who did the Star Wars kind of based one. And so I wanted this one to stand apart from what other people might consider a purely making of documentary. So that's where I tried to blend the making of and the biographical elements together to just have that point of difference. And I think it really helps because you see the entirety of Sam's journey from what happened on set to now, and you couldn't do that unless you kind of delved really deep into it. And so I think it all melded together. I hope it did.
No, I that's interesting because to me it looked like you were starting out to, you did such a good job on the behind the scenes, and you found some old archival footage that I wasn't even aware of.
You can thank Bob Lindemeyer for that. He was the guy in the props who had all the props. He was like the king of, he was like, I have this VHS tape for like, you know, 20 years ago. I found it. It was unmarked. Do you want to have a look? And that was it. So
thanks, Bob.
Crazy. Thanks,
really
Bob.
Appreciate it. It was great. I did get a lot of my information. I'd read a couple of articles on the making of Flash, and then I ran across your video, so it was helpful. I found I still got some things wrong. I guess Sam was found because he was on a game show. I had read it was the Hollywood Squares. It turns out, I don't think that's correct. I think it was the dating game.
It was the dating game.
Okay. So, you know, I that kind of stuff is interesting. I appreciate that you didn't go into his other comic book character that he did, the Will Eisner's, I'm blanking on the name, with the red tie.
Was it like the spirit or something?
Spirit. Thank you. The Spirit.
Yeah. There was a lot, you know, it's hard to choose what you go into, because I chose not to go into the whole dating game thing about, you know, how he got the role and things he had done beforehand. So, you know, it is like you, when you do your videos, it's like, well, what do you put in? What do you keep out? You still want it to be entertaining as well as, you know, factual, and you do a good job for the person that you're talking about.
So moving on through the cast, Melody Anderson sure seems like a sweetheart. I loved her in Flash. I loved her in Manimal, which I watched when I was a kid. But right now, she just seems like the sweetest mom you could ever have. Is that...
100%. I mean, pretty much everything that you see on screen with everyone is how they were in person. No one surprised me as being different to their character, who you anticipate them to be when you meet them in person. I mean, I just adore Melody, and I don't think we even captured kind of how striking she is in person. She's just this amazing, everything you would expect. You would not be disappointed if you met Melody, and still so sweet, and so, like, she would go out of her way if we asked for help on something, and she would do it. So it was really great to have initially the support of Sam, who helped connect us with certain cast members originally. But because we had his support, then we had the other cast members just say, you know, whatever you need, would be love to be part of this project. We would do it for Sam, we would do it for the film. And I think that kind of love for the film and Sam really resonates.
That's excellent. And speaking of that, when you say they're just like what they were, after watching Brian Blessed, I realized that he wasn't acting in Flash. He was just Brian Blessed with a pair of wings. Is that correct?
100%. 100%. And he, when he tells that story about how he used to like jump off rocks and pretend to be Voltan when he was a kid, like he went into Dino's, I don't think I included it in the film. When he went to Dino's office for the audition, he saw all these pictures of Voltan from the comics on the wall. And he's like, Dino, what are you doing? You have pictures of me all over. And it, like, even the comic character looked like him without having to get into a costume with the beard. And it's just, I mean, he was born to do that role. And he didn't act. I think you're right about that. He just was him loudly.
Yeah. Well, you did. I know you did include some of that in the film. And I know that he's probably the only guy that threatened Dino De Laurentiis and got away with it.
Yeah. It's that kind of in cheek, but he's kind of serious.
Yeah.
But you love him for it.
Oh, God. Banter. Yeah. He's always been one of my. I loved him in the Robin Hood, even though he only has one part. And other things I've seen him in. But yeah, I've always. The guy's voice, I mean, that's James Earl Jones, you know, memorable type of voice. So.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I used the term national treasure before, but that's not an understatement. Like, he is just a god to British people. He's amazing.
I blame him. If I were you, I don't blame him.
Yeah, we do. We keep him.
Is it Topple or Topol? I've heard it both ways.
I'm Topple. You know what? I think I called him Topple and he didn't correct me. So I'm going to go with Topple. But probably with their accent, it's Topple.
I wasn't sure. I'd always called him Topple. And then I heard it in your film, Topple. I was like, uh-oh.
I've never even thought about that question. I think I might have been pronouncing it wrong.
I felt like he was gracious enough, but he kind of looked at it like I look at my old Burger King job. You know, it was a job. I did it. I haven't watched it since the premiere. He just doesn't have a lot of fondness for it.
Yeah. Oh, he had fondness, but he just, I guess, has had like so much else going on in his life that maybe he just, it was like a job that he still really loved the cast and talked really fondly of his time on set. But yeah, it surprised me that he hadn't seen it in 35 years. So it was a bit tricky to ask him questions because most of the answers were just like, I don't remember.
Yeah.
I know. So yeah, but he didn't speak of it as, sometimes you get actors where it's like, well, it was just a paid job and I took it and it didn't mean anything. He didn't come across like that. It felt like it, at the time, yeah, it was just a job, but he still really would love to have seen all the cast again and catch up with them.
Yeah, I don't feel upset or anything. I think he was happy to talk about it, was gracious. Just it wasn't.
Yeah.
Maybe he just doesn't realize how many of us younger guys still how much we love that movie. I
think that's probably it.
You get too close to these things, you don't realize how much it's affecting people.
Yeah.
Weingart, on the other hand, I think he had plans for Clitus, even though he was dead and his tongue and his eyes came out and everything. He was going to figure out a way to get back into sequels that unfortunately never happened.
Well, and this is at the end of the film, but I did believe him when he said he did read a script that Lorenzo Semple Jr. had written for the sequel, and he was going to be the main character because what it is, and I think they cover it, there's a Flash Gordon book coming out by John Walsh end of this month, next month. Sorry, my dog's trying to come up. And they cover it. This is Buddy, by the way.
Hi, Buddy. We get a special guest star, folks. It's
Buddy. I know. Sorry. The realities of like being working from home. Clitus was actually one of many Clitus that Ming creates. And there's this really iconic photo that if you kind of dig a bit on the internet, you see Ming standing there with Clitus masks all around him. Like he just keeps regenerating them. So the hand at the end of the film was supposed to be, as far as I know, Clitus's hand, but it's the next Clitus that had just been built to carry on as kind of one of his minions. So I do think the sequel would have hinged around Clitus being the evil one.
Okay.
But also sense. I think it was part of him really wanting another job.
Well, I mean, you're always looking for your next job in entertainment. My daughter is going to the New York Conservatory of Dramatic Arts and wants to be an actress, so we'll see how that goes. But I know it's tough for a lot of those guys, but you get that one thing.
That's true.
You'll be remembered forever. I really liked Richard O'Brien's answers. He seemed really genial, but like a no BS kind of guy. He was going to tell you what he thought.
Yeah, he was amazing. He was one of the first interviews we did. He kind of just got there, has the most amazingly intimidating eyes. Like when he stares at you, it's like piercing.
Rocky Horror. Yeah.
Yeah, and he just kind of waltzed in and he was a little bit early and we were still getting set up and he was so polite. He's like, don't mind me, I'll just be over here. And he just sat and read the newspaper while we finished and like so intelligent and almost to the point that you feel just intimidated, you know. It was quite, he was so lovely and so intelligent, and he was one of my favorite people to meet on the process because I had been a big Crystal Maze fan as well, which you might not know.
I've heard of it, but I've never watched it or seen it.
Oh, watch some of it on YouTube. It's just this most amazing game show that he hosts for ages. So again, like everyone here knew and loved Richard O'Brien from things that he had done before. And he was one of the most kind of well-known cast members when everyone did the film. Right. So he and Mike Hodges were really chummy and everyone was really surprised because the American cast didn't know who Richard O'Brien was. And Mike and he were having lunch together and everyone's like, who's this guy coming on board and having Mike with lunch with the directors straight away. But I super just super, everyone super lovely. And I know that's such a cliche thing to say because people also want gossip, but really just, and people who have been so lovely in the years after the film had been, the years, it was out last year, but in the making of and since its release, everyone has been so forthcoming. If I email them, they're like happy to help with whatever. And it's, yeah, it's been really special.
Honestly, these days with as crazy as it is right now, and a lot of, I'll say just a lot of Hollywood right now that is so angry and everybody's angry, it's kind of a breath of fresh air to hear, yes, everybody was lovely and nice. You've been communicative, even though we've had trouble getting together. And I
thank you.
Everybody that I've reached out to, they've so I mean, it is what it is, and everybody's busy. I get it, and this is a big pandemic, but it's a breath of fresh air to hear everybody's nice. I'm curious, when you were interviewing Brian May of Queen, how hard was it to stay on topic and not ask like a million unrelated Queen questions?
I was so nervous that I didn't really have the brain power to think on my feet, you know, and you kind of just have a mental block because of nerves. And so I had my questions, and even then I would kind of lose track, because not only when you interview, well, when I interview someone, I'm like, I'm listening to their answer, but I'm also thinking about the next question to prepare, but then also flexible enough if they say something that I want to ask a different question. But so many times he would finish, oh, and gosh, then there would just be... so many times I would finish and there'd just be silence, because I'd just go, I can't remember what I was going to ask next, because I was so nervous about just being there. And that had been an interview that it took like a year and a half to even kind of get through to him in the first place. Then when he had responded, I'll never forget when I got the email, and you know, Brian May pops up on your emails and he's like, would love to do it, let's do it in a place where there's a piano because I want to play this thing for you. It's, no one had heard this version of the theme before, and it was when he's smashing the keys.
Yeah.
He's like, no one ever sees it, and so I'd love to do it in a place where there's a piano. And he ended up suggesting his house. Then even when we had the first date, it moved 6 times, so I would like build myself up, prepare myself, like, I'm going to meet Brian May, and then it would move, and then it would move, and then so by the sixth time, I had just worked myself up into such a state that when it finally happened, I just didn't know what to do. I was like, I'll just ask questions and hope for the best. And he was, yeah, again, I mean, you would never guess the success he has just meeting him. You know, he's so humble and so, like. And then you're reminded, like, you see all the pictures of Queen and the guitars, and then he plays the piano, and then, oh, I feel nervous just talking about it again. He's just the sweetest person and one of the most talented people on the planet. It's quite strange to be sitting in front of him when he's playing this theme song that you've grown up with, and you then click that he wrote it, and you're like, mind blown.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. I mean, I'm sure on the outside you were asking questions, you're being nice. On the inside, you're like, Brian May.
It was. I'm like, be cool. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Howard Blake almost died making this film. Is that not an exaggeration?
Not an exaggeration. He worked for 10 days straight, and he tells this story, you know, and he went to sleep, and he was like, he just didn't sleep for 10 days. And I love that you asked about Howard, because yes, Queen have the soundtrack, and yes, it's so iconic, and you know, you associate it, but Howard really did a lot of the score, and Queen either picked sections to score themselves, or they added their own flair of what made it Flash Gordon on top of Howard's score. So I often think he doesn't get the credit he deserves for what he put into the score. And he has the original score on his piano, and you see bits of it at the end. I think I put it in the credits, but he's like flipping through these like full orchestral scores, and there's like 500 pages of it. And he was like taken to the end and back to do that. And he was, yeah, I'm really glad that you asked about him, because he is, you know, again, he did The Snowman in England. Everyone loves him. And yeah, really just put through the ringer to do that soundtrack. It was incredible.
Well, I think he's half of the soundtrack at least. You know, the Phrygia scene, some of the orchestral stuff. Yeah, I'm sure he worked closely with Queen to get it going, and so that the you never feel like, oh, that's a Queen song. That's not a Queen song. And I'm a film score buff myself, you know, Williams and Howard Shore and James Horner, God rest his soul, and all these others. I really love film scores. So that Blake was able to put this together and it never felt like it didn't belong there or that it didn't work with Queen, I thought was amazing. And then when you
tell me,
he got the job 10 days before the film came out and he almost died. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, because they had someone else originally doing it. And I think, I can't remember how long this other composer was on it, but he composed like a minute of score. And they just said, we can't do this. So Howard was then brought on to do it. And I think with Queen's history and their kind of classical rock style, they really worked together and really complemented each other. And like you say, you don't feel like it's two different, like a band and a classical composer working on it. It feels right and it feels, you know, exactly how it should be.
Yeah, and you know, the music was a big reason why it's such a cult hit. It was, it wasn't Star Wars. It was never meant to be Star Wars. I think it came out at the wrong time in some ways.
When do you think it should have come out?
I don't know when, because if it came out much later, the special effects wouldn't have been as charming in the way they were. But if it came out too early, I don't think it would have worked because everybody was watching 2001 or Planet of the Apes. You needed Star Wars for it to come out, but unfortunately Star Wars is the thing that everybody went and go, well, this is weird. This isn't Star Wars. They weren't ready for it.
Yeah.
So I love that it's kept going over 40 years, that people keep discovering it. Is there any stories in there that didn't make it in the film that you could give us? Any little thing? Any exclusives?
Oh, I really, the release that I put out on a Blu-ray and DVD that I sell through my shop have on the website. What's they the have website? Bonus features. It's, well, lifeafterflash.com will redirect you now to lifeaftermovies.com. So it's all, the Life After series is now becoming its own thing. But it was really, I put out my own release because it was heartbreaking to know that there was footage that wasn't going to be seen. And even on the releases that I put out, like I have a little mini 5-minute documentary about Topol and his charity video. I've got like Howard Blake talking about him and Brian listening to the soundtrack for the first time on this little Disney cassette tape under a kid's bed because they had no way of playing the soundtrack. Funnily enough, between these two musical geniuses, they were like mid-move and they didn't have a player. And so I think I put most of my favorite things on the bonus features. But there's still anecdotes that you really would love to put in. But yeah, my favorite stuff I put as bonus features. So at least I could continue in sharing all this footage with people. I mean, there were a few times when people maybe contradicted other people and it was pretty gossipy. So there's some like onset gossip that I didn't put in just because I couldn't really verify. People said different things, and yes, sometimes in a documentary you want to have both sides of the story, but I didn't want to veer away from the main thing that we were trying to tell the story, which was what happened to Sam. So there was a few little kind of gossipy things that I'll like keep with me, but in terms of footage, I put it out as bonus features for people, and there's like, you know, another movie worth of bonus features across them, so I hope I've shared a lot for people.
Yeah, and I haven't looked at the bonus features yet. I don't know if you buy it on like a Vudu or something like that, does it come with the bonus features, or do you have to get the Blu-ray, or do you know?
No, it's only on the Blu-ray that I have on my website.
Okay.
And DVD.
I may grab that because now I'm really interested in seeing those bonus features.
Please do. Thank you. Thank you.
So I want to get into, I've only got a few more questions, and then I'll kind of let you
be a little more organic. That's fine.
Is there anything else? I mean, Sam seems to have really landed on his feet, and I really appreciate that. I like seeing that, you know, when these guys, they have this big thing and then you never see them again or hardly. And then you hear stories about how they maybe had some bad times or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was having the bad times during the movie. But it's
It's
a Dino De Laurentiis movie, so you never know what's going to happen on those.
Yeah.
But it's...
But it just goes to show you don't know really what's going on with people, you know, and not everyone is vocal about what's happening. No, not everyone wants it spread in the media. And so it is, it's like his son says in the film, like everyone's like, you know, did Flash fall off the edge of the earth? And he's like, well, no, he was just at home being a dad and trying to provide for his family. And he's got his own struggles to be dealing with everything. So, you know, and talking about the film happening organically at the beginning of this interview, like if I had approached Sam maybe a couple of years earlier than I did, it might not have been the right time for him because he was still kind of going through stuff not too long before I spoke to him. So I think it all happened at the perfect time.
That's good. I'm
sorry about my dogs, by the way.
No, don't you worry.
There's pigeons outside.
I'm not going to cut any of that out, so you're.
That's fine. I'm pre-warning you. But no, he was amazing to share his story and, you know, to be as honest as he did. And I think when you, and then we had spoken about this, if you're trying to inspire people to see how far someone has overcome obstacles in life, because maybe people have gone through the same thing and they need that kind of realization that they can do it as well, you need to know how far someone's been to know how far they've, what they've achieved. So I, you know, hats off to him for this filmmaker who had never done a feature documentary before. He kind of opened his life up and it was, I'm so grateful for it.
Well, it came out wonderful, and it was almost his own hero's journey when you went through it, because at the end you're like, here's a guy who's got his life back together and has had a remarkable amount of self-awareness to what he'd been, and not enough people have that. So I think it turned out really well.
Thank you.
Let's talk about, you're obviously a busy director.
I'm trying.
You've got Life After Flash, I think, has been very well received. So next you've got Life After the Navigator.
Yes.
I don't have a ton of questions on that. I saw the film a few times. I remember Pee Wee Herman doing the voice.
He did.
And I remember the very well done special effects with the reflective ship, which is very hard to do, especially in those days.
And we talk all about that in the film
I'm not going to make you give away any secrets, but when is your release plan for that? And is there anything you want to talk about?
Very soon. So it'll be interesting to see if the same audience of Flash, like I grew up with both films, but obviously the release is 6 years apart and Flight of the Navigator is geared towards a more younger audience. So they have different audiences when they came out, but obviously love Flight of the Navigator, same vein as Life After Flash. So you have a celebration of the film, but it's also a biographical look at the main star in that film. So in this case, it's interview and cast and crew from it, including Jeff Kleiser, who did all those amazing special effects, and obviously his brother Randall, who directed it. And he came on board as an executive producer of the film, which I was just so incredibly amazed that he did. And he was really helpful getting in contact with cast and crew. But we have like Veronica Cartwright, obviously from Alien, played the mom. So we speak to her, and Cliff DeYoung, and Matt Adler, who one of my ultimate films is Dream a Little Dream. And so when I met him, he was kind of, I didn't tell him this, but he was like Brian May level nerves when I met Matt Adler, just because he was in Dream a Little Dream. And then we talked to the puppeteers who, you know, did the like Johnny Five in Short Circuit. So you have all these like films that you grow up with, and suddenly you're meeting these people who's like, wow, you worked on this film that I loved and you worked on this film that I loved. But we talked to your cast and crew, and then Joey Kramer is the then little boy who played David Freeman, the kid that goes up to hang out with Pee Wee Herman's character. And at the time, a couple of years ago when we started filming, if you Googled him, you would just see his criminal record and his mugshot. So again, like Sam, we look at how he's overcome the hurdles he had in his life, but also where he went in his life. And you really, I mean, his story is incredible, and I'm so excited to share with everyone. So that comes out Blu-ray starting from next month. Again, same website, selling them through. And then it'll be on VOD in December. So it'll be this year.
Excellent. Yeah. That'll be a nice Christmas present.
It will, just in time for Christmas, everybody. That's and right. Bonus features. There'll be bonus features. There'll be like a little booklet in the Blu-ray as well. And so I try and put as much extra stuff in as I can to make it kind of worth people's time.
And so that's obviously, you're already done with post-production. It's in the can.
It is up. I have to be on this computer because it's the final film is uploading to the Blu-ray authoring company as I speak. Wow. So
newsflash, everyone. We
finished.
We're almost ready. So that's excellent.
I know.
So you're working on another one, and this film is a little bit more near and dear to my heart. It's Life After Atreyu.
Mm-hmm. Which is the Neverending Story, of course.
Yes. I love the Neverending Story, and I think it's kind of like Flash, where Britain loves it as much as I think kids, Gen X kids, love it.
Yeah, it is. It's funny, when we first met Noah, he talked about having like a jar at Comic Cons where he would like have dollar bills and just say, if you need this for therapy, like take one, because everyone you talk to, that scene with the horse, oh, Artex, it just kills you every time. And yeah. It, like, everyone remembers that scene. And I saw there was a picture, it's a cosplayer at a Comic-Con, who the cosplay was a horse's head that sat on the ground, and he spent the Comic-Con like pulling the head, and everyone had to walk past him. I thought it was brilliant.
That's
so
great.
super excited about this one. Again, Life After series will be hopefully more than three. We're working on more, but same vein, it's more than a making of. It's the story, like a human story about the life of the main star. And it's not a like, where are they now? It's a, what has their journey been? What have they overcome? What can we learn from them? You know, they inspired us being in these films that we grew up with. And so their stories can inspire people of where they are today. And so we were halted slightly because of the lockdown. We were supposed to have been out in the States filming this year, but super, super excited. I think they're upstairs. We recently, at least in the UK, Colin Arthur, who designed the creatures, he designed the Falcor head, he designed the Rockbiter, well, he designed Falcor, the Rockbiter, he did the makeup and for a few characters. So we went to his house and he's got an original Falcor head there. So I have like a little piece of Falcor's fur and one of his scales somewhere upstairs. And man, you know, so it's all these things that you see, and like you know a little tear comes in and your whole childhood, and it's amazing. You can't do this, you can't go and relive CGI
no.
at a studio, you know. It's
no.
So that's what makes these films special. So I'm really excited for this one. We've started filming. We interviewed Lamal, we interviewed Klaus Doldinger, who did the score, and Colin Arthur, obviously, and we met Tammy and at the Comic-Con in Liverpool, and we started filming with Noah. So it's one that I'm really excited to pursue as soon as we're allowed out of the country again.
Were you able to, and I don't want to ruin any surprises, but were you able to get in contact with Barrett Oliver? Because
I feel like
that's a parallel journey that might be interesting as well.
Yeah, I'm in the process.
Okay. So that's not a no.
No. I'm definitely going to go out of my way to try and make this one that fans won't be disappointed with. Because as a fan myself, I know what I would want to see.
Sure.
So I'm making what I think is what fans would want to see. And of course, he's a huge part of it. So I hope.
And so you would say probably, I guess, now that you've done Life After Flash, are you taking a lot of things that you learned on that one, because that being your first one, and saying, okay, now that we're doing these other ones, you can refine it, you could do other things?
100%. I mean, learned so much on Flash, because it wasn't just, For me, I had worked a lot with production companies as part of a big team or part of, you know, a commission to a broadcaster. And when you go from that to a totally independent film where you, Ash, who is my partner, but also produced it, and he's producing all of them, it's really just the two of us doing all of it. Like, I edit it, he helps me with the technical stuff, and he shoots it, and I'm there shooting some stuff too. So it really is the two of us from start to finish. And I didn't know how to release a film on a Blu-ray. I didn't know how to get a film up to distribution. I'd never edited a long form film before. So you're learning all these things and the technicals and the legals. And so even just from those basic points of how to do a film from idea to having it available on a website, on a Blu-ray, I learned so much. And so that, and then the creative way of how I want to tell the stories, of intertwining the biographical bit and the making of, learned so much. And, you know, and just how to approach people, and I mean, so much goes into it, but for sure learn so much on Flash, learn a lot more on Navigator, and now I'm excited to implement those and find out what I'm going to learn on Atreyu and beyond.
Well, yeah, I mean, I totally understand that. Like, my first I just do these little YouTube videos, just commentary, nothing major, and they still take weeks to do. I can't imagine a full length one. My first one, you know, it's like, oh, I guess sound is important. And then, you know, I did one on Ghostbusters, and then I did the Flash one, which I'm probably the most proud of. But you know, it's just a little penny ante stuff with me on my computer, and I you know, taking that next step and actually taking camera crews out and interviewing people and everything. I can't imagine how, like you said, distribution, you have to work with crew, you know. I can yell at myself, I can't yell at other people very well.
Exactly. But even like with you, I mean, as long as you're learning something along the way, you're progressing. And what one of the biggest things I've learned is to not beat myself up. If I don't have a full budget and a full crew, it's not gonna look like a Netflix documentary that has £1 million budget. But I know that when I watch it, what I went through to make it happen, and I embrace the imperfections that are in it, because I know how it was made, and it was totally made with love and respect for these films. And, you know, and I think when you see, like, you have more of your videos to compare, and you watch your first one now, and like even little, like you might add a border with something or use a different microphone, and each one you'll improve. And so, for me, that's the biggest thing, is kind of appreciating what I did, knowing that I'm not going to be maybe 100% happy if I watch it again in 6 months' time when it's finally out. But I appreciate what I would change about it, knowing what I had gone through to make it.
Well, and you know, Flash has a billion little flaws to it. That's why I like it.
Yes.
The original Star Wars, a lot of those movies back in the 80s. And yeah, you were mentioning the Artax scene. I mean, I don't know. I don't see this now. When I see something like Alvin and the Chipmunks, I just roll my eyes and I think, my kids don't have those films that scar you when you're a kid. Like,
yeah. Show them Watership Down. And
oh,
then-
yeah.
Yeah,
but I made my kids watch things like Return to Oz. Oh my gosh,
that with Jack the creepy. Oh, yeah. The pumpkin,
the woman who takes her head off and then has
all, and they have all the
screaming
theme
at her.
Oh, but you're right, everything is so, like, sanitized. I mean, not to say that things should be censored, but you're right, kids don't like the Dark Crystal. That's not like with the Skeksis. But it's brilliant. And
I got to grow up in that time, but that's why I'm wearing a Flash Gordon shirt right now.
Yeah.
And why I love these kinds of things.
Yeah, and I feel bad for kids these days, unless you have parents that sit you down and give you these films. You know, they're growing up on the films that are coming out now, and not to say they're bad, but they don't have that magic to them. And they're probably, I'm always curious, like in 20, 30 years time, what films people are still going to be talking about as like the iconic films of 2020 and 2019. And, you know, I feel like the 80s just had this amazing magical, just a magical decade.
All the kids, other than maybe Harry Potter, all the kids have now are things that are just recycled versions of what we have. And that's great for me. Well, not so great these days, but you know, you say, oh, they're bringing back something that I loved. I'm like, but what are they making that my kids will love that will be theirs?
I think
Hollywood is really being short-sighted about these things.
Yes.
When those kids grow up, the Gen Zs and on down, they're not going to care about movies, and they're not going to take their kids to movies because they had nothing like I had to remember growing up.
Yeah.
That stuck with me for 40 years.
Yeah. Just YouTube videos, probably.
Yeah.
So you're in. They'll be like, oh, remember the Functionless Yoda videos?
Oh, they're bringing PewDiePie back. They're rebooting
PewDiePie. But I'm so grateful that there is this moment in time that we were part of, and it makes me feel really special. You know, because I was a teenager in the 90s, but I was born in 82, so I still had the 80s decade. Sure. You know, and so it really was just magical.
I was born in 70, and so I'm as Gen X. It's sad because I turned 50, and I'm realizing I'm as old as a Goonie, and yet now the Goonies are
50. Yeah. I can't even go there. You see these things on Facebook saying this song's 25 years old.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, what?
Did you see Macaulay Culkin say, "Hey everybody, I feel old. I turned 40 today."
Oh. Yes. I can't. It's too depressing. I can't think about it.
Well, yeah. I don't have. Is there anything else you want to add? Otherwise, I know you're.
No. I mean, I just thank you for loved your video. Thank you for wanting to chat. I think you know it's really quite nice when you have spent so long like trying to ask other people to speak with you to right. be asked. It was very nice, and I'm just really glad that you liked the documentary, and I'm glad that as a really big Flash fan, that was one of my biggest fears, would it live up to what Flash fans would want to see? Because I was conscious some people might not think there's enough making of in there, and some people might think there's too much making of in there, and so it was a really hard balance. And again, one thing you learn is you just then have to do what you think is best. I don't read reviews. Just in case, because I read a couple. I was like, oh, I can't
they've
read
been,
them anymore.
They've been good. You're fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, if I recall.
No, yay!
Don't worry. I just want to, you know, I'm an old film buff, and I've, you know, when DVDs came out, I really went hook, line, and sinker into those, and I watched documentaries on all my favorite films and that sort of thing. Well, we've reached a point where I've seen all the behind-the-scenes stuff on most films, and other than, like, The Abyss behind the scenes really went into how bad and how rough that shoot was. But the rest of them are basically everybody's just, you know, patting them each other on the back, and it's a big giant love fest about how everybody was and how things were made. And that's been going on for the last 20 years. And that's gotten a bit old. So you came in my opinion, with something that, yes, had the making of stuff. That was interesting. I enjoyed that. Some of the stories. But you took a much more human element to it. So I think that yours actually stands out a little bit more.
No, thank
you.
As
a guy that's watched a lot of these kinds of things. That's what I saw.
Well, you will then know his story. And he's a character. His story is... I mean, just amazing. So I'm really excited about that one. And one thing we're going to do is the crux of his story film will be told over a road trip from LA to North Carolina, where the original book prop is. So we're just going to hire an RV with him and travel cross country, just filming the trip and chatting about the film. And so I'm really excited about that. And I'm so gutted that we haven't been able to do it yet because we're locked down. But yeah, really excited about that. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you think when we get that one out, hopefully next year. So
now you Brits, you and a lot of Europeans, I sometimes don't think you realize how big this country really is. That is going to be a long drive.
I'm so excited. I've already like done the miles. I know how long it's going to take. No, we do. I'm obsessed with America. I would love to live in America if I could. I want to go to every state. I love everything about it. I can't tell you how much I love America. So I'm really excited to just go to the little small towns and the back roads. And if it takes, I think I worked it out, it would be like a 13-day drive or something if we did like 300 miles a day. Or like, it's a, you know, we appreciate it's a decent chunk. Sure. But lots of footage, lots of bonus features.
Well, if you come through Kansas City, we'll maybe we can sit down. If you're not,
that would be amazing. That would be amazing.
I would love to. I could sit you up in a house. I've got enough cameras. We could make it happen.
That sounds fabulous.
So, well, thank you very, very much for taking the time. Like I said, I know you're busy. I know we've had to reschedule a few times, but this is.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, don't be. I understand. And
This last week, if I was hoping the film would be finished a week before, so I was hoping last weekend it'd be like a celebration weekend of not having, you know, to do anything in the edit.
Hey, you're uploading now, so.
It's uploading! Yay!
You deserve it. I will be first online to get it. And
thank you.
Because I really enjoyed the other one. So thank you very much, Lisa Downs. You can find the movie on lifeafterflash.com. Her new site is now redirecting to lifeaftermovies.com. She's starting up this whole new series, and I wish you well. I hope you do many, many more of these, because I really, really enjoyed them.
Thank you. We've got a couple more in the works that I'm not announcing yet, so I'm excited.
Maybe you can announce on lastmovieoutpost.com.
I will. Exclusive scoop.
we need all the help we can get, I'm telling you.
I hear you. So do I.
Well, all right. So thank you very much. And for those of you that have watched all the way through, thank you very much. And leave your comments below, and if you have any questions, I'll let Lisa know, and I'll bother her some more. Take care, and thank you again.
Thank you.